Hello and welcome to Starkey's Kosher Classes monthly teleconference. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg and I'm here today joined by Rabbi David Heber.
Good
welcome.
Afternoon. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing great. This is a monthly teleconference and we're glad that you participated with us today. We can, you can join us in two ways. One is through the telephone. That's the old fashioned way, but it still works. And the numbers are, well, if you're on by telephone, you know the numbers. If you're joining us by the web, the numbers are available on the top of the screen in case you have a problem with your computer. On the web, we're at dimdim.com, D-I-M-D-I-M.com, and the class you go into is called Kosher, of all names that we chose. And today, we're going to discuss the upcoming Kashrus Currents. Now, of course, Kashrus Currents is our quarterly publication that gets sent out to how many? Like maybe 50,000 households across the United States and the world. And we've been doing this for about 25 years. And it's coming out, you know, I know you're working on your article now, Rabbi Heber, to the last, down to the last wire. So it should be out in the next couple of weeks. So we thought we'd give you a preview of it, and that's two issues in that are in that issue are Kiddush, the laws of Kiddush, which is the sanctification over wine on Shabbos and on the holidays, and also if we have time, hopefully the proper way to discard Shemos, which are Jewish holy books. You don't just put them in the garbage, and of course your questions. We enjoy taking questions. We can take them in two ways. If you're on the web, you can chat with us, and I see somebody is already getting a head start here, David, with some chatting on the right side of your screen. Or if you're joining us by phone, in a couple minutes we'll explain to you how you can ask your question by telephone. Running the show over here is Reb Zev Steen, our right hand man sitting on our left. And we're very appreciative in getting everything set up and running everything smoothly. So let's discuss Kiddush, Rabbi Heber. What is the? Where should we begin? There are so many different aspects. One thing I want to point out is that I always read your articles with great interest, and I see that you have only 46 footnotes. Now that's not the record, is it?
No, there are others that other rabbanim in the office have added more footnotes to their articles. Like, footnotes really serve a dual purpose. One is it explains, first of all, it brings what's called Marma Kaimis, which means it tells you the sources for various points. I try not to footnote the source of every item, otherwise it'd be 150 footnotes for every. Every sentence almost has some sort of source because we're making some halachic statement, a Jewish law statement. But I only try to put a source or write it where it's something that is maybe a bit of what's called chiddush, that someone would say, boy, that's very interesting, like who says, or
right.
I never realized that, or kind of something that's a little bit
new,
novel, or if it's an explanation, like a contrast, where, well, I'll write something in the article and I want to write an inference, or something else that needs sort of an explanation. You don't need the flow of the article, but rather just for the record kind of point.
Now, on the subject of footnotes, I enjoy it if I write an article, if somebody asks me a question or a comment on the footnote, right? Because
really
that shows not only did they read the article, you know,
they read your footnote.
But they read the footnote. I always get excited.
That's true.
You get a certain
right.
feeling because you put a lot of effort into this after all. How many hours and
a lot of time
tens of hours go into the
revision of it is what takes the most time. The writing it is you write your thoughts.
Right.
And you look up a few things, but then the add-ons and people have, I show it to a number of people who have comments and questions and clarifications to put in a lot of time. Funny, just yesterday when I got home, someone asked me a question. When I came home, someone asked me a question on the street. It was raining, and someone says, "What happens if I do this?" And I'm thinking, "That's in the article, and it's actually footnoted."
Okay.
So I was able just to give him right the answer. It was raining. I was glad I knew the answer.
Check footnote 37. Yeah, we'll see.
So his question was, if a person made a bracha, recited a blessing, and skipped the word atah, which is with the normal blessing, we say Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, right? Blessed are you, our God, King of the Universe. And what if you skip the word Ata, which means the you? Have you fulfilled your obligation of the blessing or not? And the answer is, although certain words in any bracha are what's called ma'ake, which means that if you miss them, you have not fulfilled your obligation of the bracha. Like if you miss the word Baruch, you skip it and you start with the word Ata, then it's not a good bracha. In fact, sometimes children make that mistake where you start them, okay, let's make a bracha, and you say Baruch, and then they say Ata Hashem. Then that's a problem because they haven't said the bracha. But if you skip the word Ata, the Mishavura in Hilchos Brachos and the Laws of Blessings, and which is the exact footnote is in the article, actually,
which one is that?
At footnote 24 tells us that it's a Mishnah Berurah, Simen Reish Yod Dalid Sivkot Gimel, which means chapter 214, the footnote 3 of the Mishnah Berurah. I believe that's going on that, and that says that if you miss the word Atah, then you do not have to recite the blessing over again.
So you say here, if one did not hear a word that is not integral, you mean it was left out?
Correct.
One need not repeat the Kiddush.
Correct. Well, here I'm talking about listening. In other words, this area of the article, and I spend a bit of time on this, is the concept of Shamaya Ka'ona, which means when you hear, most people fulfill the obligation of Kiddush by hearing. Hearing is as you've said it. So I guess it goes through some of the nitty-gritties of fulfilling your obligation of Kiddush as a listener, which
right.
is what...
In other words, the person said the whole blessing, but you missed some of it.
Correct.
Because you didn't...
Because you didn't hear it, or someone made noise, or you sometimes people slur and don't say Kiddush properly, and they miss some words. So if you miss the word Ata, don't worry about it. You don't have to hear Kiddush over again. However, if you missed Hashem Elokeinu, both of those words, those two words are what's called Ma'ake, which means they are an integral part of any bracha, any blessing, and therefore you would have to actually repeat Kiddush.
Obviously, the word Baruch is also
correct.
Because integral. Is it integral or integral? We have to be pronouncing it correctly. I see that word written, but I don't hear it pronounced that much. I also noticed, talking about your footnotes, I think we should focus on the footnotes today.
I hope I remember all of them.
If you don't remember them, what do you expect from the readers? Now, the first footnote has to do with the tune of Kiddush.
But this footnote actually was originally later, way back in my original...
I have a feeling you get a lot of enjoyment from writing about the tune of Kiddush, because you're a chazan too.
Well, no, my father was a chazan, and although I don't know Ron, I'm not a chazan, but my father was a professional chazan. He did for many years in St. Louis, and many years after he retired, he traveled all over the world, Davin Yom
Right.
Ron.
So it's a hobby of yours.
Music was an important part of the family. So it's interesting, footnote one I really had later... Yosef Kishnei decided to put it, rather than bury it at the end, it was
so what does it say?
Note. It says that the tune that we recite for Kiddush, which is the beginning of every Seder, every Yontif meal, that same tune is recited on each of the Yom Tovim at least once, somewhere in Davening. When I say each of the Yom Tovim, I call it each of the Zmanim, as I'll explain. We have the three Zmanim of the Yom Tovim.
Three main holidays.
Namely, Pesach is Sukkot, and Pesach Shavuos and Sukkot. So Sukkot, it's actually on Sukkot Torah, which is why I called it the Zmanim, because literally Sukkot Torah is not part of Sukkot.
Okay.
But when they call up the Chasam Torah, the tune that they use is this tune, Mershus, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That is the same niggun as Kiddush, and therefore that same tune is borrowed to the Mershus.
Now, what are you trying to say over here? I mean, is there really a reason why you would want to use the tune for Kiddush on Simchas Torah, calling up the people to the Torah for their honor? Or
I think it's just
because
of Yom Tov. Well, Akdamus, the most famous of all of them is Akdamus. Mershus is something that people hear,
right.
But Akdamus is something that everybody's familiar with, and it's the same thing. Akdamus, Bimlin Shana, da 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 da.
Do you think it's borrowed from Kiddush or the other way around?
Probably, my guess is it's borrowed from Kiddush.
Okay.
Although, you know, there's another part of thinking about Yom Tov and davening, where the part of davening has the tune of Elitzion, which is B'nei
Beitzchak,
which is really a dirge. It's a
right.
It's an Eicha, not Eicha.
And how do we have a sad tune on Yom Tov?
It's not, until someone pointed out with me, I never even put the two together. But it's B'nai Yitzchak, right? When we, that moment,
remembering, it's
we're
not
remembering.
It's not a sad, it's just,
it's
not
a
happy,
moment, right.
It's somewhere between
right.
Happy and sad, right. Okay, very good. So what else do we need to know for making Kiddush? I see you noted here about standing or sitting, and some stand, some sit. I personally, just to tell you, I stand for Kiddush, for the Mikbar side of Kiddush, because my father stood for making Kiddush. And when I went to yeshiva, I learned that there are various customs, and really maybe more correct is really maybe to sit, at least for part of it. But I kept doing what my father did because there is a source for it.
Well, here's where we apply the rule, Eilu ve'eilu divrei kimchayim, which means either way you do it is correct in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of God. And there are really three different customs. And this part of the article, I believe, was not footnoted at all, because it's really just elaborating on the reasons behind the various customs, which are all, again, have a source. The reason why one stands for Kiddush is because it's this testimony that God created the world, because Baruch Hu was the Borei Olam, God created the world. And the reason to sit is because you want a kvius. You want to, when people sit around the table, I'm being motzi you, I'm helping you fulfill your obligation through your listening. It's when people sit around, it's much more of that we're together. We're one big happy family, so to speak. So that's
people are standing, so they're walking, they're here,
etc.
Right.
So
right.
So but some people, like in Yeshiva where we learned in Israel, they actually stood for Vaychulu and then they sat for the rest of Kiddush just to have both elements of the Eidus, which is the Vaychulu, and then they sit.
What do you do?
I stand for the whole Kiddush. Like
you stand for
the
whole Kiddush?
Yeah, by night, but by day.
That's
I
actually
sit.
The Hasidic meaning, right?
That's, I think, more Hasidim stand, but by day we actually sit.
I stand and I sit during the day?
Right, that was my
that's
father.
Did.
Yeah, my father did that. But much of the article really goes to, you know, several parts that are really important of, obviously, of Kiddush. It's a brief discussion of the obligation, which we're familiar with. And then we talk about the wine in the Kiddush cup, which is necessary, how much you have to drink, the shiurim, the measurements.
Now, I notice here, excuse me a second, Rabbi, but you notice it is best to recite Kiddush using a silver becher, which means a silver cup, and the footnote, right, because it's a fulfillment of his snub and mitzvahs, meaning to do the mitzvahs in the nicest way.
Correct. This footnote, actually, when I wrote this in the article, so I didn't have a footnote originally, and Rabbi Heinemann, reading it, said, in other words, it's something that we do mitzvahs in the most beautiful manner, and that I believe is the source of why, you know, bechers are silver and makes
right.
a great birthday present. You know, like that's
right.
one of the most classic
classic
presents.
Just to say, we mentioned that Rabbi Chaim read the article. He's of course our rabbinic administrator, and we should say that none of these articles, almost nothing that is printed. Almost nothing that is printed by this Darkei or publicized goes without Rabbi Heinemann's approval.
Everything, every word of Kashrus Koreitz of the article
right.
are read
Rabbi
right. Heinemann, and it reads everything. Once in a while, things will slip by. Obviously, we checked it over. He made comments, and then I fixed it up. Basically, he's going to read.
Right. So this is basically his. He has approved everything in here. Why did silver? Because how about if I'm wealthy, right? I'm Bill Gates. And I want to make Kiddush. Should I use gold? Gold becher? Or diamond studded? Or why silver?
Because that was the common goblet. I don't know, in palaces they use gold goblets. It was always a silver goblet, you know, which is a becher. But I would assume that.
Why is that? You should have a footnote on that.
I guess you've got to check.
Why not gold?
We'll do a research project on goblets and the history thereof.
Golden
yeah.
goblets.
Pharaoh's
goblet. Does it say? Doesn't say. It just says his goblet.
It says the value of it, but we don't know what it was made of.
We don't know what it was made of. It could be that just it was too. It was impossible to get. I see Zev's looking up what golden goblets on his little palm over there. We're gonna have an answer in a few seconds.
Then we talk about a very important part is Kiddush Brachos Suda, which is probably. One of the most complicated parts of Kiddush,
okay.
and that is you need to, when you recite Kiddush, you have to be in the same location as where you're going to eat. Or more fundamental is the person that hears Kiddush You cannot fulfill your obligation for Kiddush unless you eat a meal. And we define what a meal is, so the Kiddush Shabbos cake is enough.
Right.
I mean, we actually even scale that back. You could fulfill that obligation with pasta salad, et cetera.
Oh,
you haven't fulfilled your meal for Shabbos, but you have fulfilled the meal enough that Kiddush will fulfill your obligation. We get into change locations.
Right.
And when you're allowed to change
rooms. Hold on. In footnote number 20, you talk about what the size of a kezias is, which is the minimum amount that you have to eat for a meal or to make a
correct
an after blessing. And so it says it's about the size of a golf ball or a roll of quarters.
Right. So that is a...
That's another article, right?
It was. We wrote an article a number of years ago on halachic shiurim, which is a measurement.
Measurement.
And it's very interesting. Chazal...
And what bracha are the golf balls? If you...
the rabbis originally chose... They want to say, when do you have to... what's considered a meal? When do you have to recite Brit Hamas and benching? Well, when you need a kezias. The measurement, kezias literally is the size of an olive. But it's interesting that Chazal gave, our rabbis gave us measurements in terms of things that were familiar to people. So they said, well, an olive, everybody knows what an olive is.
Right. Back then.
Back then. Well, what happened was, there's a major discussion by Yehuda, Professor Landeby from Prague, as to, well, maybe the size of olives changed. And therefore, there's much discussion in how many fluid ounces is a kezias, which is what the volume of a kezias is. But when you throw out at people, well, it's got to be, you know, so many milliliters or so many fluid ounces, 1.27
right.
fluid ounces, it's hard to conceptualize how big that is. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Schnapps cup, a plastic schnapps cup, is typically one fluid ounce, so it's a little more than that. But you want people to be able to, you know, sink their teeth, no pun intended, into something that's very familiar to them. And Rabbi Heinemann and I, probably about 10 years ago, we actually, it was actually in our old location on Warren Road, we took different items, and we actually calculated, we came with the volume of them by doing water displacement. It was a fabulous project. We had such a good time. I had a blast, right? Watching Rabbi Heinemann in action, the technicalities is just a very special, memorable experience. And I tell this story all the time. We you know, took a golf ball and put it in and saw how much it displaced. We took different things to see what is close. And we came up with actually a roll of quarters is, believe it or not, slightly smaller than a golf ball in volume.
Okay.
Even though it's longer, people are surprised. When you take a pull,
the roll of quarters includes the wrapping around?
Everything, right,
everything.
The whole thing. Both are very, very close to a kezias.
Okay.
And it's not a problem. We also measure tam-tams. How do you measure tam-tams, the volume? We wanted something that has a standard size. If you say a matzah, matzahs are typically, but you have some are smaller, but let's say you want to take a cream cookie of different sizes, or people say, how much bread do I need for a kezias? How much? Well, it depends. What bakery are you buying it from, right? Every bakery is different. So rolls of quarters and golf balls
are
standard.
Pretty standard, right.
Tam-tams are standard, so we actually, remind them to go to auto parts store and buy lacquer. Right.
And cover
and spray
and see how much water it displaces.
Correct, because otherwise it gets into the...
Right, it'll be absorbed.
It's absorbed, therefore it wouldn't give you a proper sense. That was a lot of fun. We sprayed it up and we put it in the water and we checked it. We actually checked with the company a number of years later with the Rav Mapsher, my good friend, Rabbi Yankel Horowitz. I asked him, does these stim, do these equal the measurements that you have on file? And he checked it out. And we were very close to what they had.
The one thing that I mentioned about the roll of cords with the cover, without the cover, that doesn't make so much of a difference, but you remember what Rabbi Heinemann said about what it says in Jewish law about an egg with its shell or without its shell. So Rabbi Heinemann asked the question, well, what's the difference? I mean, how much is the shell? It's really very little. So he answered, no, but when you hard boil it, there's a difference, because there's a little airspace that could be significant
right
over there.
So,
with the shell, you include that aspect. Without it, you don't. I just want to reiterate, I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and this is Rabbi David Heber. We're here in the Starkey offices in Baltimore. We're speaking about the upcoming Kashrus Currents that you do not have yet, but you will have it hopefully in a couple weeks. Either you get it in the mail or with your newspapers, or you can find it on our website at star-k.org, star-k.org. And I think let's see if there is a question about Shemos. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Let's see if there are any questions by telephone. Yes, it's upcoming, Avi. It's not yet printed. Soon it will be Avi's wondering where that article is. It's right here. The way that you can ask a question by telephone is we're opening up the lines. If you press, what is it, Des? Okay, so you can unmute yourself by pressing star 6, and then we'll be able to take your question. So just feel free to jump in, and we will take your question. Let me see. Susan is asking, do you have any written newsletters, et cetera, to send out rather on the computer to read? I think she means that rather than reading it off of the computer, we do have the Kashrus. I mean, that's our main publication that comes out quarterly. You can call our office at 410-484-4110. They can tell you how to sign up. It comes as an insert for nothing in the following magazines, the Hamodia, the Ataid, and I believe the Jewish Press. I'm pretty sure it comes as an insert 4 times a year, so you don't have to, there's no charge extra for that. Or we can mail it to you also.
Or email, send an email, vostar-k.org, and contact us. And
or you can contact
an email
us.
To the...
Right, right. So again, if you have any questions by telephone, feel free to hit *6 and unmute yourself. Okay, so let's talk a few more minutes about Kish, and then we'll move on to Seamus. Let's see, what else is there, Rabbi Heber, that we didn't...
We
want to leave something for them to read the article. Some of those, they'll read the footnotes.
We also talk about the time of Kiddush. How early, how late, you could say Kiddush, Friday afternoon, you could say it from a certain time before Shabbat. That's actually relevant to Hanukkah, because Hanukkah, the earliest you can light the menorah on Friday evening. Of course, you have to light early on Friday because it's after sunset, it's Shabbos. So the time is Plag HaMincha, which is an hour and a quarter before sunset based on the length of the day. It really means 1/12 of the time between, it's 1/12 of the time between sunrise and sunset is 1 hour. You take 1 1/4 of that. And that amount of time before sunset is the earliest time. In the winter, it's about an hour before sunset. In the summer, it's about an hour and an hour and a half, maybe closer to an hour and 3/4. Depends on your location.
What time is it in the North Pole?
Well, the North Pole is dark, yeah.
I'm kidding you, right, Heather.
Anyway, so that's the earliest time for lighting Hanukkah menorah, and it's also the earliest time to make Kiddush. That comes out important in the summertime. In Anchorage, Alaska, you mentioned north, where sunset is 11:30 at night. So Plag HaMincha in the summer is about 9:45.
So you can't make Kiddush before 9:45.
Right, that's right. So early Shabbos.
9:45.
9:45. In the winter, it's not. You don't have the Hanukkah problem because it's sunset so early there that you're gonna, you're gonna want to light
that's
early.
Great.
And the latest time for Kiddush, actually, this is something not so common. A person has to make Kiddush by day, but if a person says Kiddush by day, then
what do you mean it's not so common he says Kiddush by
meaning
day?
The night Kiddush by day where he missed
oh he missed saying it Friday night so he has to
he
make
has
it
all
up
day.
On Friday
you have all day you don't say Bechulu if that happens you have all day Shabbos and this is one of the rare cases where we have something known as Suffolk Day Risa where we're Makbid which means normally the person's not sure if they obligated in a blessing they don't make a blessing let's say a person forgot to take Lulav and Esrog on Sukkot and they realize after sundown.
They take it without making
it without a blessing. But here, since Kiddush is a Torah obligation, the person forgot to take Kiddush Friday night, forgot to take Kiddush all day, or he was in the hospital for something,
right.
And now the sun goes down, he still really needs to make Kiddush because he has a Torah obligation to say Kiddush. So the Mishnah Berurah speaks about this exactly. You should say it without there, the Shem Hashem, just to mention.
How do
I make a Kiddush in that case?
Because the bracha is the Kiddush.
Correct.
Right, so that's the problem.
One of the rare cases. It's a fascinating
Did you talk about that yet?
I mentioned it in there.
Which footnote is it?
I don't remember the footnote, but I don't go into major detail. I just bring the Mishnah Berurah on that. So we try to cover...
I see in number 21, you talk about saying Kiddush in shul in the synagogue on Friday night, which is an old custom, in order to take care of the guests who ate in shul.
Right, so that's a Kiddush that you have not fulfilled your obligation with that Kiddush because you don't eat a meal afterwards.
Right. And they give the wine to the child who's under the age of bar mitzvah.
Correct, who's older, who's a bar chinuch, which means he's old enough to understand, was 6, 7 years old, but he's not bar mitzvah yet.
It's always one of the great things of going to shul when you're a kid. You get a little bit of wine that your parents won't usually give you at home. Just a little bit. Yeah. Just a little bit.
It's nice. It adds a certain right. dynamic to what goes
right,
on.
Right, right.
In the shul.
Okay, let's take, we do have a question about Kiddush. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a woman. I make Kiddush Shabbos morning, Miriam says, before my husband is home from shul. But know that many women do not. Is it necessary? Okay, and if it is not, when is the stop time for eating?
Excellent question. I actually talk about this in the article.
About women
Kiddush at home. It's very relevant because women, you don't want to eat Shabbos morning, whether they're going to shul or whether they're not going to shul. They'll want to make Kiddush or they'll want to eat something. So the halacha is like this. A woman is allowed to eat before she davens. Okay? Even on a regular weekday. If a woman, let's say this morning, wanted to eat, men are only allowed to drink before davening. Most items they could drink, but they're not allowed to eat. Women are allowed to eat before davening. So the halacha is like this. If they, and let me step back one more. Women also, there's a dispute whether women are obligated to just daven a part of davening, meaning giving, praising Hashem, thanking Hashem, asking of Hashem, bakasha, haidah, etc. Or they have to daven the Shemoneh Esrei also. This is a dispute amongst the early commentaries, amongst the Rishonim. Our custom is women daven, and we go like those opinions. But if they're tarud, which means if they're busy, the classic example would be raising the children and taking care, they're unable to daven, they can rely on the opinions that say the short version, namely brachas, is enough. So the answer to this question is it depends. If a woman typically davens every day or typically davens every Shabbos, then the halacha for her would be as follows. She could say, if she says just brachas and wants to eat, she does not have to say Kiddush. In fact, she wouldn't even fulfill her obligation of Kiddush before davening because she's not obligated yet. The obligation of Kiddush only comes once a person has davened. So even, let's go to a man, let's just step aside. If I want to drink something before davening, which is permissible, so I say brachas, and then I should summon a brachas at least, and then I could drink something. But I don't have to make Kiddush. If I go to shul, let's say after chakras, for some reason I want to drink something, I'd have to make Kiddush. Because chakras is the obligation of Kiddush. Now, by women, if a woman normally davens, and in the morning before davening on Shabbos, she's only said brachas, she could eat without Kiddush, and like I say, she can't even fulfill her obligation of Kiddush then. If her husband came home from Hashkama Minyan and made Kiddush then, and she hasn't davened yet, she did not fulfill her obligation because there's no obligation for Kiddush at that point. So, but if she's already davened Shachris, and then ideally she should recite Kiddush, that's because now she has gotten an obligation of Kiddush.
So that's a woman who normally...
That's a woman who normally davens. That's the truth for a Maisha that I'm not going to get into, and I didn't really get into, but this is the best thing. If a woman normally does not daven, in other words, a classic example, she has small children
right.
at home,
she's
busy, and therefore she should, once she says brachas, she now really has an obligation for Kiddush,
mm-hmm.
because now she's davened. And therefore, ideally, she would want to recite Kiddush before eating. So
Excellent.
It really depends.
Okay, so... thank you very much. Okay, now he asked a question, Avi. In terms of Kiddush, what are the customs related to giving out the Kiddush wine? Does one drink from the cup first and pour for others, pour for oneself and drink and pour for others? How do you do it? Let me take a stab at this, Rabbi Heber. One thing that I think you should not do is drink from the cup first and then give it out to others because that's what we call ma'os to some people, that they don't like to drink from the same cup that the host drank from. Unless it's family and let's say they don't care. But other than that you shouldn't put people in a position where they may feel uncomfortable or disgusted, really, of drinking from the cup that he drank from.
Correct.
So you should definitely pour it out. Would you agree?
It's also correct. There's also a ruthless reason. It's called, if you drink from it and then pour cups from what
okay.
you drank from, it's called kais pagum.
Okay.
And that's ideally not to do it like
so
that.
So he's going to pour some out.
Correct.
And which one is he going to drink? From the silver coat, cup or from the one he poured out?
Doesn't really matter under normal okay. circumstances, but typically, we spoke about this in the article, what you do is you pour it off for the people at the table, and then you drink from your own becher, and then you pour for everybody.
Okay.
That's the ideal way of doing it, but under one condition, if it's just you and your wife, you'll read the footnote, and you'll see exactly how to deal with that.
Okay, we'll get the footnotes over there. Okay, footnotes are very important, as we discussed. Okay, I think we'll move on. We're going a little bit long here than we normally do, but I think as long as people are willing to stay around, we'll talk about the other topic, which is the proper way to discard Sheamus, because I think we got some questions about that. I definitely want to discuss those. So one question we got from Benjamin was, is it proper to put the pasuk Oji Shama on a wedding invitation, being that will it be discarded in the garbage by most people? So the question is, when people send out a wedding invitation, they very commonly put the verse Oji Shama Bar Yehuda, that there will be joy in the future in Jerusalem, and they put that verse onto the invitation as a nice, you know, it's a nice verse to, it's very relevant to what's happening in the
sing it at the wedding,
so they put it in the invitation. So, but on the other hand, it is a verse that comes from the Torah, and it's on the invitation. And people will throw it out. People get invitations every day of the week. They're not going to go to the Sheamus and put it into the discarded and buried in the way that it might be done with other items. So, is it proper to put that verse onto the invitation?
Right. So actually, the Sheamus guidelines were written by our rabbinic administrator,
Rabbi Hyman, right.
And he actually puts out the following guidelines. If something is typically even three words that are written for learning purposes are Sheamus. So if your son comes home, or daughter comes home from school, and they've, you know, they're writing down, you know, Bereish Bara Elokim, and the translation of it, and they have worksheets with those psukim, even parts of psukim of verses, that it would be, that is Sheamus. It has to go in Sheamus. But if it's a melitza would be a cliche. It's not there for learning purposes, studying purposes. It's not. It's just there as a nice, you know, one liner, so to speak. As a, it enhances.
It's not teaching you anything.
It's just the cliche. Right. That's what people say.
Right.
Then that's
okay.
Not Sheamus. It's okay.
It's okay.
To throw out, provided I think that's not a complete pasuk. If it's a complete pasuk,
he said that.
But I don't know if we talk about that. But I'm sure if it's a whole pasuk, then it's just a whole pasuk by definition. But I don't know if that was an answer. Sure,
right. The question would be though, even if a person could discard it, would it be is it better to leave it off? I would think so
because
it's okay to have it on.
It's lost its hashiva, so to speak, of being a pasuk. And it's being used in this
right.
In this form. You know what else you have?
I just want to say, as you mentioned, this article on Sheamus is written by Rabbi Hyman.
Right.
It's also going to be in the Kashrus Currents. And Sheamus literally means name.
Sheamus, right.
The names,
name of God.
Name of God. It literally refers to the names of God that are written on a piece of paper, and how you would the way we use it colloquially, it means how to discard those names or those verses. And if, let's say, you had a mezuzah, a parchment that you put up on your doorpost, and it's now not usable anymore, well, the way to discard it is not to put it into the garbage or even to the recycle. You would put it, you collect it, and put it in the Sheamus, which means they collected it and they buried it in the ground, and that's considered an honorable way of discarding of it. So,
like a person who passed away.
Like a person is also like a holy being. Every person
right, holy
is a part of God. So the holy objects, we bury them and then they disintegrate down the run over time.
I think what people do in Sheamus, besides the, you know, worksheets and homework sheets, which is very crucial.
Well, that's one of our questions here. Regarding the Sheamus portion of the class, I would like to know what the halacha is regarding things such as children's school papers. Can they be discarded? Now that's a major issue.
Typically not. I go through.
Kids bring home, every week they bring home.
So the Dvar Torah they bring home certainly is Sheamus. The worksheets, it really depends. If it's worksheets that are, you know, Chumash related or Navi related from the Torah, then certainly has to be put into Sheamus. If it's just, let's say it's the Hebrew language, you know, Diktuk, so Shamar, Shamarti, Shamar, you probably have that in your school.
Right.
Those drills of just words. Those are not Sheamus. Just because it's the Hebrew language doesn't give it kedusha, doesn't give it holiness. And the same is true the other way.
Right.
Therefore, if it's English, the Kashrus Currents itself
is
English, but it's
right.
It's certainly Sheamus. So if it's, in that case, it's definitely, those worksheets would be Sheamus. Sometimes you have to really look carefully and see, you know, if they pick words out of the Chumash study sheets, then if it's a single word, then
three words, and they're trying to teach the kids what that means. then it would be shameless.
Typically an exam, very it's for sure shameless. Mi amar al mi, who said to who? It's got a half a pasuk in there, and that certainly can be shameless because they're quoted pasukim from there. But what people sometimes also don't realize is that the entire sefer and everything associated with it, on it, becomes shameless, even if it doesn't have any word on it. So for example, if you have a piece of paper that rips off, if you have a sitter, and sometimes the corners fray, and now you have the little bit of paper off, that bit of paper is shameless because it came off of a sitter. Even binding tape, a lot of times, in yeshiva, we have many svarim that were bound, and over time, the binding starts to lose a stick, and that black piece of tape falls off. That black tape is not garbage because it's called Tashmisha Kedusha, which means it has served, or a book cover has served the sefer, and now it gets Kedusha, mezuzah cover. If it's our cover, certainly would be.
One thing that does come up, and I want to mention that also, is about newspapers and magazines which contain secular information should not be put into Shemus, even if they also have a Torah section. So you may have a newspaper that's full of all the world news, but it also has one section of Torah. And Reinemann has been saying for a long time that that's a degradation of Shemus to put it in. To the Shemus, because here you have mezuzahs, and you have tefillin, and you have Torah, and then you put in your daily newspaper.
Right, correct.
You know, with the advertisements for all sorts of things that it degrades the real Shemus.
Even the Jewish papers.
Even the Jewish papers,
meaning that are catered to the religious community, that have primarily articles of Jewish interest, and have different Torah, are beautiful. It's full of all different areas.
We recommend you guys buy those instead of the other ones.
Right, correct. Parsha, Halacha. But the bottom line is one thing is you could tear out from that, but people found that very difficult to sit and rip out from the newspaper all the different Torah, and sometimes on the backside you have something else.
Right.
So behind him, and again, like you said, for years, this important ace is to double wrap it.
Well, it says they're wrapped in paper and placed in a plastic cover, so it's one wrapping, another wrapping, and placed into the garbage. Somebody once read this very carefully, this line, and he asked me to ask Rabbi Heinemann, why does it say wrapped in paper and then in plastic? How about if you have two paper covers, like two bags?
Waterproof. I think it was a waterproof.
So he wanted to be, the outer one should be plastic so that it will not rip apart so fast.
And also I think of waterproof.
Waterproof, okay.
And two plastics would be okay, I believe.
Two plastics would also be okay, yes. So and then put it, and then you double wrap it like this and then put it into the garbage. And that way it won't degrade the real Shemitz that's going into the be buried. Now we have a couple of questions here by chat. Again, if you're joining us by phone, you can ask us a question. Just hit *6 on your phone keypad, and that will unmute you, and we'll be able to you'll be able to join in. And we encourage that. We'd like to talk to you. Here's a question: would younger children's picture worksheets, asks Liba, with short descriptions of what is going on in the parsha, is that shameless? So the kids bring home pictures, they probably color them, and on the bottom it says, Yitzchak is being brought up on the Akedah on the altar, and they have a picture of it with a description of what's going on in the picture. What do you say?
I guess it would be, because this is a story, and you're
writing. Well, the picture itself is not shameless.
The picture, right. The picture, but it's not a degradation of shameless. In other words, you have a description of a story, a chumash, that's going on, and in other words, if it's a story, so that's really the Vaitaira. It's a description of what's going on. In fact, the description is coming.
The caption may be
via the picture.
The caption may be a Torah. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, if you have a caption, but then you can put the whole page in because
right. It's not a degradation.
It's certainly not. It's a description.
Okay. Here's another question. My son brings from Alex. My son brings from school his parsha sheet, which is pictures illustrating the parsha plus some words from the parsha. Okay. If it mentions Hashem, usually is written as a yud, dash, and then another yud. Can we dispose of it in the trash or does it need shemus? Yud, yud.
Yeah, I think if it has that Shem Hashem, if it has the name of Hashem like that, it would definitely be shemus. I would even suggest the teacher
should really not write it. You may want to tell the teacher, or not in so many words, but get it through to them somehow that he should be writing the Hebrew letter hey with a slash, which just stands for the word Hashem, which means the name, and that doesn't have holiness, and that can be discarded.
By writing the actual tat in that way, putting the yud and so on.
That's a problem.
The name of God, the name of Hashem.
That brings us to another thing. When people write, let's say they write a letter to somebody, they often will write on the top, the Hebrew letter is Beis and then a Hey. So that means Baruch Hashem, or Be'ezus Hashem.
Right.
So you can discard that.
Correct. Rabbi Haim says there's a stringency to...
It's
a stringency. It's called a hiddur. You don't really, if you could throw it away, it's not a problem.
Okay. Does double wrapping help for the kids' worksheets, asked Daniel.
Not if it's real
shame. No, if it's real shame, it wouldn't help. It would not help. You know, a question that comes up that really could be addressed in this article, but I don't think it is about recycling. Now with all the recycling that's going on, it just came to Baltimore recently.
Right.
I had it in California. You probably had it when you were there as well.
I don't remember, it was a long time ago.
Okay. But they've been doing it in California for a while. But it just came to Baltimore recycling. So you have something, does that qualify for Shemos? Let's say for something like a mezuzah, certainly you cannot put it into recycling, but something that's questionable.
Can't.
How about for the newspapers, which have Torah in them? That's the question that should be addressed here.
Right, you're right, but it can't be recycled because when you put it in the garbage, the Rabbi Heinemann's tvar of double wrapping it and putting it in the garbage means ultimately it gets buried. Right? And it's protected. In other words, to bury it with garbage is a design. It's not proper. But here it's protected. So it's good. So you're fine. But when you put it recycling, it's going to get, you know,
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Out and become something else.
He's asking Daniel, when does double wrapping help? Double wrapping helps when you have, let's say, a newspaper that has inside of it. It's basically a secular newspaper that has news of world news or business news.
Not only Divrei Torah.
Not only Divrei Torah, it has advertisements. But it also has Torah in it. Then double wrapping will help that you can put it into the garbage. It is not real Shemos because it has the secular information, but you can't put it into the Shemos. So you put it into the garbage double wrapping. Okay, we'll take one more question. I think then we'll wrap it up, Rabbi Heber. Excuse the pun. What about English Torah sheets that have Torah quotes in English? Okay, we mentioned that already.
So that
is shameless if it's Torah. The fact that it's in English or French or Swahili does not mean that it's not shameless. It could still be shameless. Can you delete Hebrew files from your computer? That's a very good question. It's not addressed here either. I mean, if it's just a file that it says on your computer screen, it says, HebrewDocs.pdf or whatever.
Someone emailed you a PDF.
Right, then you can delete that. But what happens if you open it up on your screen and you see the name of Hashem on the screen? That is a real serious question which I'm not going to address.
Right, but I think the police could have been lenient on that. Otherwise, you could have serious problems with any Divrei Torah on the computer screen. I mean, Divrei Torah consistently comes.
What's that, Zeb? What do you think?
Yeah, art school had that problem.
What was art school?
Because they were working on their sitter on their computer screen.
Okay.
Can they delete stuff? Or even can they even close the screen if they have Hashem's name on it?
Okay. I mean, the custom has become to do it. It's based on the fact there's real no mamashas here, which means you don't really have... that's not called...
It brings up the classic question. When the teacher writes a verse on the blackboard or the whiteboard, and he or she writes the name of Hashem out. The stories go that they have to come in and cut out that blackboard and bury it because they couldn't erase it. But
that's a big problem.
There is a discussion about it because it doesn't really mean to do it and it's not meant to be done. And maybe you just leave it there and then when whoever is set up to come in and clean up at the end of the day will do it. But they're not really intending on, they don't know about Torah, so they erase it. So there are different ways of dealing with that. Okay, I think that we have some more questions, right? I think we'll close it here because we really had a nice spirited discussion, and we need to understand what's the connection between Kiddush and Shemos. Then we could. Is there any, you know, what's
sanctification of the name of Hashem?
Okay, there you go.
Both are the same.
Thank you. On that note, I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you, Rabbi Heber, for taking your time out.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure to be here.
And again, we are here every last Wednesday of the month at 12 noon Eastern time, and we look forward to you joining us then. You can get a copy. This conversation has been recorded, and you can get a copy of it if you go to our website, kosherclasses.org, kosherclasses.org, and click on podcasts.